On the board.
Dr. Thompson, we welcome you and ask you to open with a 3 to 5 minute opening statement, and then members of the council will ask you some questions.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the council. I'm honored to be given this opportunity to appear before you in consideration of becoming a candidate for the Board of Regents of the university. I am currently a retired professor of orthopedic surgery as of December 31, 2009, after 35-plus years on the faculty at the University Medical School, where I taught, did research, and practiced clinically as part of my role as a faculty member. I was recruited to the university in 1974 from the University of Virginia as a department head of orthopedic surgery, and I held that position for 21 years. When I was asked to become the chief medical officer for what was then the University of Minnesota Health System by Provost William Brody. After the merger and acquisition with the Fairview Health System, I was asked to become the Associate Provost for Clinical Affairs for the Academic Health System and Associate Dean for the Medical School. In the year 2000, when the faculty practice plan for the University Medical School was reorganized, I was then asked to become chair of the board, and after 18 months, asked to become the CEO of that organization as well. On a national basis, I've served as a non-paid volunteer in academic and professional organizations, including the National Orthopedic Research Society, the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons, both as board member and president of both organizations. I've also served on the National Merit Review Board for the Veterans Administration, the National Study Section for Musculoskeletal Disease at the National Institutes of Health, and the National Institute of Health's Council for the Institute on Arthritis and Musculoskeletal Disease. I'm currently a member of the Minnesota Medical Foundation Board of Directors and chair of their Development Committee. In my role as a department head, chief medical officer of the University Health System, and CEO of UM Physicians, I was the responsible executive for financial performance of organizations with budgets of up to $400 million a year. I would be the last to imply that I'm an expert in finances, but I recognize the value of having someone as an expert in finance and part of the organization. In addition, I served on the board of the Fairview Health System for over 10 years as chair of their finance committee for 5. I have actively pursued equity and diversity in my role as a leader in all of my positions, focusing on gender equity and racial diversity. What I learned from those experiences is that I was more successful in gender equity in both the orthopedic department, where we achieved national prominence, as a training site for women in orthopedics, with twice as many women in our training program as the national average. And in my role in UM Physicians, where the COO and the CMO were both women, and the chief medical officer ended up succeeding me as the chief executive officer. My experience in promoting racial diversity was not as rewarding, and I believe that deserves more study and effort, as I implied in my application, to determine a mechanism for improvement. My experience in gender equity, I learned that paying attention to female students and encouraging them frequently piqued their interest in the discipline, which is not commonly associated with women in medicine, that is orthopedics. But when I hired female faculty members, things changed and we increased our numbers greatly. I suspect the same could be applied to racial diversity, but it's been harder to recruit faculty in that area. My understanding of the Board of Regents is that they are responsible for the governance of the university based on the original charter of 1851 and later Constitution of the State of Minnesota, which vested the Board of Regents with the powers to enact laws for governance, select a president, appoint professors, determine tuition, remove officers, etc. I believe the individual regent is expected to act at all times with decorum befitting the role of a regent. actively participate in the business of the board and be respectful of the opinions and positions of other regents. My own interest in becoming a regent is based on my continued commitment to the university and its excellence for the future. I believe my background qualifies me to contribute to the future of the university, and my track record has been characterized by working to the best of my capacity for the betterment of the organization or institution to which I am committed. I have the time and the energy to contribute, and I would relish the opportunity to do so.
Okay. We'll open it up to questions from members of the council. Pat Duncanson.
Thank you for your service to our state and to the university. I'd like to talk a little bit about the mission, or I'd like you to talk about the mission of the university and the aspects of a land-grant institution with research, education, and outreach and public service. What do you feel the greatest challenges to that mission, or what is the greatest challenge to that core mission of the university as we look out the next 5 to 10 years?
My own perspective on that is that the resources, particularly financial resources, that allow the university to achieve its mission will continue to be restricted. I think that particularly in the research environment, it will be much more difficult to achieve external funding from the federal government than it has been the last 10 years. I think the challenge of keeping tuition at a reasonable level for the students at the university will continue to be there, and I don't see how we can continue to increase tuition without some controls. I believe that the role of service in the university to the state in whatever area it might be, whether it's in agriculture or medicine, will continue to be more important as time goes on. I think that a clear strategic direction developed jointly by the governing board of the university and the executive management of the university will be essential to achieve its mission as our resources become further constricted in the future.
How about what do you think might be the best opportunity because of that structure, because of that mission?
Now that's a question I haven't really thought about as the opportunity. I think, however, that the challenge there is going to be focusing the strategy on the mission, and the university won't be able to achieve everything it's done in the past. I think that the threat is to try and participate on what I would call opportunistic areas rather than follow a clear strategic direction for the university. And maybe if there is an opportunity going forward, it is in outreach and public service for the university to the state, which could enhance its resources. I think private philanthropy is another area which, of course, I'm involved with through the Minnesota Medical Foundation, and we will have to continue to focus heavily on that.
Yes, sir.
Madam Chair, Dr. Roby, in evaluating the applications, I myself and Ms. Covington came up with our own schedule, objective schedule of attempting to evaluate each of the applicants, and I'd like you to know that, sir, that you got a perfect score on my thing, and I haven't known you before. I have this question. What do you believe should be the relationship between the trustees of the university and the president?
Very close. I think that in my experience as a faculty member at the university in an administrative role, almost the entire time I was at the university, I've watched the relationship between the various presidents from Peter McGraw on, who came the same year I did, to the Board of Regents. And I think that a very tight, compatible relationship between the Board of Regents and the presidential office is critical to success of the university. And again, that goes back to what I mentioned to Mr. Duncanson. I think that having a clearly developed strategic direction and priorities for the university developed between the president's office and the Board of Regents is critical to the success of the organization.
Can I follow up? Doctor, but if there's a close relationship between the president and the trustees, then isn't it possible that the trustees could not objectively evaluate the performance of the president?
Well, my definition of close would be a little different than that. As a governing body, I think it's essential that they have to evaluate the performance of the president. And I, when I say close, I've watched presidents be remote from the Board of Regents and hesitant to engage them in issues that have come forward within the university. And on the other side, if the regents aren't engaged by the president, then it falls to the regents to delve into what is going on inside the university in a way that's difficult for a governing body to do. So when I describe a close working relationship, it means to me that there's expectations on the part of the Board of Regents that the president will keep them informed of all the issues that are in front of the university and respond to questions that might develop from the governing board, the Board of Regents, in a way that they can intelligently help direct the course of the university.
Okay. Yes, Harriet. And then Richard.
Tell us a little bit about a time that you strongly disagreed with the majority opinion of a committee or board, and a little bit about the issue. How did you make sure that your opinion was heard? What was the outcome, and what happened afterward?
I've disagreed quite a few times. I'm trying to think about what would be the most appropriate one for me to respond to. The most recent controversial issue I dealt with when I was the chief executive officer of University of Minnesota Physicians and, of course, was on their board as a voting member was the effort to merge a group of community cardiologists with the faculty members at the university in cardiology. And there was some strong feelings on the members of the board of directors that we should not do that. I spent almost 3 years working on that project to try and understand the pros and cons of both sides, and it was eventually unanimously endorsed, approved, and has become a successful venture for the cardiology section at the university as a result of that. But it was quite controversial at the time that it was begun in 2007.
Okay, Richard Newell.
We've already kind of talked a bit about how the board and the president relate. Could you talk a little bit about the board itself and how you view governance versus management and what are the attributes of a board that is doing well versus one that may be having issues?
Well, I go back to the same theme, which to me has been a common theme in every good board I've been on, as well as boards that weren't so good, and that is without a clear strategic plan from a board or strategic direction and an implementation plan from management to effect that strategic plan, I don't think a board can be effective, and I don't think the organization can be effective. I don't believe that management should present a strategic plan without buy-in from its board of directors, board of regents in the case of the university. And I think the board of regents should have some participation in the development of that strategic plan, what its priorities will be for the future, what resources are going to be allocated to various objectives in that plan. But I think management's responsible for bringing those to the board and then implementing them and keeping the board informed as time goes on about achieving those objectives.
How much input do you think the current board has had in that strategic direction for the University of Minnesota? And we have a new president, so what do you think about going forward in that area?
Well, I think, in answer to your first question, I think that the current president and the Board of Regents have had what I would consider to be a close working relation. I think that the Board of Regents has been kept informed and has been involved in decision making. What will happen with the new president obviously will depend upon the direction of that president and the Board of Regents at the time that the new president arrives. I don't know the new president, I've never met him, but everything I've heard about the new president is positive.
Paul Thatcher, then David Fisher, Sonia Cairns, and Ardell Brady. Okay, that's all.
Doctor, you've presided in and around the university on the medical side during a very important period of time in which there's been significant change from when you first got there. And what do you see going forward in regard to the relationship between the medical school and the hospitals and so on and all and whatever else? What are the challenges going forward and changes that may occur kind of thing? And how, and as I look at the current Board of Regents, we have a hospital administrator who's got four more years and a clinician from the Mayo Clinic who has four more years. And it takes a couple of years or so to get geared up. Service on any large board. Do you see a role for you going forward in regard to some of those issues where the board could look to you for some leadership and insight and so on?
Yes, I do. I have some, obviously, 30-some years of experience in the medical part of the university I have some strong feelings about the leadership of the Academic Health Center and the medical school being critical to the success of the institution. The university is and its components in the medical system. That leadership has to face external influences and environment and be able to make clear decisions about what is the appropriate way to go. And in the state and the Twin Cities medical community, the changes that are occurring in the healthcare delivery and in healthcare financing are creating more and more consolidations throughout the state. My belief is that the university, in order to train physicians and other medical personnel, has to have a strong clinical presence in the state of Minnesota. And that means alliance with whatever the appropriate partnership is in the medical community throughout the state of Minnesota. And I think that personally that there's room for us to do more in the state than we have done in the past through more partnerships in the outside the Twin City areas in the state of Minnesota in the medical community. So I think that some of these things are practical and some of them aren't, depending upon what the local circumstances might be. And I have a pretty good understanding of that after 35 years of practice in the state of Minnesota.
Dr. So going forward, you think there is some significant developments and opportunities and challenges and so on in your bill?
I do. I'm certain there will be, as a matter of fact.
In that regard, if I could just add on here, in another part of my life, I'm in charge of collapsed roofs. It's disgraceful, and I apologize for it, but as chairman of the Finance Committee, I am responsible sort of for the business part of that. And part of that is, what are we going to do about a new facility and so on? And part of that is about where are we in this town and this city and what's going to happen. And there's even talk, as you would know, of the possibility of the this is not much publicly, but it's not unknown. There's been talk about the relocation of the whole medical apparatus to the other side of the river and making come alive that medical alley vision that goes south in Minneapolis and aggregating this all together with Abbott on one end and the public hospital on the north end and so on. I mean, these are kind of great, huge ideas and do you see such ideas as something important that is on the horizon and in the next decade?
That medical alley concept of going down Chicago Avenue to Lake Street is an attractive concept to me. I've had some exposure to it. I think the practicalities of retaining the university as a research-intensive medical institution in connection with that is something that hasn't been addressed. And this came up 15 years ago when we first started, 20 years ago now, when we first started talking about a new university hospital. And the issue continues to be, how do you have a clinical enterprise that's related geographically remote from the research enterprise? It can be done, but it's very expensive and very difficult. And
I thought the idea was to move it all.
Well, I don't think you can move it all in the concept that I have, and that is, how would I work with the School of Engineering and their graduate students coming back and forth to the operating rooms with me if I were operating down at
Chicago Avenue?
Yeah, Chicago Avenue, and the students and their professors were across the street on Church Street. That kind of interplay is one of the things that makes the University of Minnesota very unique in that we are all on one campus at the present time. Now, that could be it could be managed, but I think it would create challenges.
Well, therefore, we need somebody who understands those things.
David Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Thompson, could you speak a bit more about why you personally would like to take on this role, and tell us what you would intend to accomplish during your term as a regent?
I'll tell you a personal vignette about this. Having been able to sit and read the newspaper in the morning for the first time in my life on a weekday morning, I was sitting in the kitchen reading a newspaper with my wife back in October. She read to me, "They're looking for new members of the Board of Regents. Why don't you do that? You'd be a good regent." That was the way I ended up deciding to fill out an application, and so I was recruited. And as I thought about it, having been out of active employment, if you will, or active participation for the first time in my life for 9 months, I really did feel the need to want to be involved, and I thought this is something that I could devote time to and contribute to because of my previous background and understanding of the university. And what I would hope to get out of this would be able to contribute to the body deliberation of the regents in a way that would help create a focus for the university going forward.
Sonia Kerr.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Thompson, how would you translate your considerable leadership within the medical school and the broad medical community to the more general and complex needs of the university?
With in energy and enthusiasm, I would say, and I would give you an example. The most exciting thing I ever did at the university was to serve on what was known as the Anonymous Committee. And that was a committee in the 80s that selected the regents professors for the University of Minnesota. It was called Anonymous because no one was supposed to know who was on it, so they couldn't be lobbied by people trying to get to be a regents professor. And I served on that for 5 or 6 years, and it gave me an unbelievable respect and for the breadth of great talent that is in the university, from the School of Governance to Agriculture to History to Chemical Engineering. And I learned during that process as a member of that committee that I could communicate with other members of the university and that we all shared certain common values going forward. And I think I could learn from them, as I did, and I think I could learn from other members of the university environment outside the medical school as a regent what was important for them and participate in helping them achieve that.
Thank you.
Ardell, just a moment.
Going back to a little bit of what Mr. Thatcher was asking, what's been your experience and how do you see the partnership developing or it has developed between the University of Minnesota, University of Minnesota Rochester, and the Mayo Clinic?
I am pleased with what has happened there in the last 10 years, particularly. My own personal experience in working with the orthopedic department at Rochester has been very, very positive from day one. I think I got here in August and of 1974, and I think it was the 1st of October, I was invited to be there as a guest speaker and was welcomed by the entire orthopedic community. I would hope that the partnership could expand. It's always been based around research, and the new partnership is going to help that. I think that there's more room for us to do things together in education. And we could, I believe, share some clinical service activities with Rochester if we were careful about the way that was done so that it didn't create a conflict of interest on either part.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
All right. Paul Taylor, then Bert Swanson, then Margaret Carlson.
Dr. Thompson, recognizing the critical importance of the medical school to the University of Minnesota, I want to learn a little bit about that from the student perspective. Just tell me a little bit, how many years in school does a person have in order to become a doctor and to be able to go into practice? What does it cost? What are the sources of funding? Just a kind of a snapshot as to how all that fits together.
Well, the traditional graduate from medical school today will have finished a bachelor's degree, so 16 years of formal education before applying to medical school, sometimes more, another full 4 years of medical school, and the average medical student graduate at the University of Minnesota now graduates from medical school with, I shouldn't say the average, the graduating medical student has an average debt of over $110,000 per student at the time they graduate from medical school. They then are faced with a minimum of 3 years and most of the 5 years of additional training in postgraduate work, depending upon what specialty they might pursue, whether it be family medicine, it's 3 years, or internal medicine would be five or more there. So that the average physician going into practice after going through all their training will end up with a debt load of close to $200,000 easily on the average. And that is an average number of the debt when you consider some students will have resources they can pay their own way. Others will have much more than that in debt. So the average includes those that don't have debt.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Thompson, in your write-up, your application, you really piqued the point of interest for me, to the previous faculty member. You indicated the importance of education, and I think you also talked about that today. And you said to balance the research priorities with educational opportunities and requirements. We know teaching is important, and it counts, but it really doesn't count under the publisher-perish syndrome that is so prevalent within the university. How do you tend to balance that or maybe fix that? Or I think it, when I was there, I think it was starting to improve, but I'm not so sure it has. Gone that, continued in that direction, from what I've heard. How would you address that?
Well, if I were to be a regent, I would want to see the leadership of the schools, the deans of the schools, have a real focus on educational commitment to the student body that they were responsible for, whether it be in liberal arts or agriculture or medicine or law, and that putting education as the number one priority, to me, it would be a critical element for the university. The university is a teaching institution. And to me, the priority needs to be on fulfilling the needs of the students to be taught. And to do that in a university, you must have research in order to pique the minds of those students going forward.
That isn't mine.
Margaret?
Excuse no, it's me. Not mine.
It's the airplane telling me it's been canceled, I'm sure.
Okay, Margaret?
Excuse me.
Oh, yes. I'm going to pick up on Paul's question, and as he said, we've got Patricia Simmons from the Mayo, we've got John Frobenius coming out of the St. Cloud Hospital Medical Care area. What are you going to bring that's unique to that group that people won't say, oh, we've put on a third doctor, instead we put on a giant of a new regent?
Well, I would hope that I would bring a perspective that, I don't mean to imply that Regent Frobenius Regent Simmons don't have a university-wide perspective, but I have an internal experience that neither one of them has, and that I believe, as I mentioned earlier in the role of education, I believe that the influence of the clinical environment has to be tempered in the university's environment around its educational mission and not just being another strong clinical arm within the state of Minnesota. And it can be done, and it has been done, and it is being done now, but I think that's always somewhat of a threat in the medical environment that too much emphasis may be directed towards the business aspect of medicine and away from the educational academic mission of medicine.
Okay. Jerry?
Yes, sir. Actually, I'm a graduate of your medical school, and I'd like you to take the example of your experience with the medical education and maybe expand this to other things. And my question is, are we as a university meeting the needs and the expectations of the citizens of the state? And what might you do about that?
I don't know the answer to whether we're meeting the needs of the citizens of the state, mainly because I just don't have that much contact with the citizen body. As I've traveled around the state, I have been approached by concerns about the need for dental care and medical care in the parts of the state, such as Crookston and in those areas where I've been visiting, that I think the university has really focused on trying to improve. And I think that will always be a problem. The whole delivery of healthcare, as you know, as a graduate, is changing dramatically. And the medical school and the other schools in the Academic Health Center will need to adapt their graduate programs to accommodate those changes going forward. We may not and probably will not be able to serve the needs of this state 20 years from now with the aging population that we're facing nationally and locally by graduating enough physicians to give everybody access to a primary care physician when they want one. That's my own personal bias. I think that we're going to have to do more physician assistants and nurse practitioners and to screen people that are being cared for in the state as we go forward. Does that answer your question, sir?
Yeah, my second thought after that is what would the you as a regent or the university do about, you're talking about using other levels, and we're talking specifically about medicine, but I wanted to expand this about other areas that you may not be able to answer as far as the functions of the university or the service of the population.
Well, once again, I think if I were a regent, I would have to rely on management and what their plans were and whether they made sense to me. We went to the School of Veterinary Medicine or the School of Agriculture, for example, to try and meet the needs of the state. I certainly don't have the background on that. I'd have to rely on the executive management of those schools and then get the appropriate information that I could find to see if it made sense to me as a regent to endorse or not endorse that.
Right. Patrick Duncan.
Sure. Thank you. Thank you for your comments thus far. In asking another question, would you please comment? It's been said that our state may be facing a $6.5 billion deficit. And could you share with us your thoughts regarding cuts or alternative sources of revenue or restructuring higher education in general to maybe accomplish greater efficiencies and or cost reductions?
Well, I think we obviously are going to have to have cost reductions and greater efficiencies to get out of our deficit just as we are on the national basis. But in this state, we certainly will need to do that. In the higher education field, as I alluded to maybe obliquely in my opening remarks, I think that I believe we will see a limited number of resources coming to the university for the future, and that we will have to look outside of the state budget to achieve some of the objectives that the university wants to achieve and fits with its strategic plan, such as private philanthropy and more service activities going forward as a potential for generating revenue to maintain the university. I don't think we can continue to come back to an ever-expanding legislative supplement for the university going forward.
Joanne Saley.
Dr. Thompson, could you please give an example then when you've been faced with a shortage of finances to do what you want to do, either in your department or in your other associated responsibilities on boards, and what role you played and what you brought to the table in helping to make those decisions?
When I was a department chair for probably 15 years of that time frame, we had a constantly expanding department and grew. The orthopedic department became one of the top five departments in the United States, as judged by its productivity on a research and educational point of view. And that all started with three of us as faculty members in 1974. In 1990, things turned around as the reimbursement for health care for professional services in this community changed dramatically. And I had two potential faculty members being recruited at that time, which I didn't think we could afford to fund, and I withdrew the offers to those individuals. And I took the rest of our department, there were 12 or 14 of us at that time, and we all took a 30% cut in income for the next year in order to stabilize our budget and try and get back on our feet because of the reimbursement changes that occurred really dramatically at that time in 1990-91. That was the most dramatic financial crisis that I faced as an executive.
And just with that, because we know that most of the budgets that we're dealing with have to do with personnel and salaries. So here you personally went after individuals and salaries. Did you lose any of those staff after them volunteering to take that 30% cut, or did they stay?
I did not lose any of them. But the reason I think that was successful was that I believe it's important to have a transparent financial environment for individuals in the organization. And they could see, as well as I could, what was going on, and they understood that it was, if they liked what they were doing and they liked where they were, that they weren't going to be able to continue making the same salary that they'd been making. Some of those might have left if they had been young and just starting and had an opportunity to go some outside the state of Minnesota to some other place. But as it was, none did.
Okay, Lois Josephson, and Bailey, and then Paul.
The university has some discovery buildings that the state has invested considerable resources in, and the university as well as private philanthropy. Immediately adjacent to is the proposed science park. One of the challenges that the university faces is to build a discovery research buildings with good researchers and to hopefully benefit the state with the technologies and innovations that will flow from that research. How, in light of the fiscal scenario that the state is facing, that the university will be facing, do you see the brightest hopes being realized out of both the Science Park and the Discovery Center?
Well, as you are aware, one of the buildings in the Discovery Center has been curtailed already at this point in time from the original plans. I think that the key to the University Discovery Center and the adjacent science park is making sure that we have recruits in the university science environment for those buildings that are leaders in their field and that can attract talented assistants and students to fill the needs of the future going forward. That then will fuel the need, or the, I shouldn't say the need, but the desire for the science park to grow as it has access to talented students and talented research coming out of that university to be employed in science, technology, and development. So I think that I personally am not concerned that we will be able to fill those buildings with individual scientists. What I would be concerned about is filling them with high-quality scientists that can lead into the next generation of science development.
Okay. Julie?
Oh, yes, thank you. I see kind of a train wreck. I'm glad you're a finance guy. But on the one hand, the university has expressed the goal of becoming one of the three or four or maybe five top research institutions in the country. And we're faced with, as we all know, diminishing resources from the state. And we can't do much more about raising the costs for our entering students. So I wondered if you have thought further about how the university may have to redefine, the Board of Regents has to redefine the mission of the university. It's not the only ball game in the state. We've got Minsku. We have a private system. I think the university has probably raised the bar for admission, collecting a more select group of students and leaving other institutions cope with less prepared. Have you given some thought to what we may have to, decisions that we're going to have to make about education overall in the state of Minnesota and the particular role that the university, given its resources, can carve out? Not asking you to be a genius here, but this is just kind of...
well, a genius I'm not, I can promise you that. But I do think that collaboration with other research, with other educational institutions in the state is critical for the university's mission. I view the university as being the lead in the state of Minnesota in higher education. Mm-hmm. For a research-intensive university. It is our research-intensive university, and that is its mission. But that doesn't mean that we shouldn't be collaborating with other educational institutions in filling the needs of the state of Minnesota for other disciplines and other needs. The role of, particularly in medicine, which of course I'm most familiar with, the role of nursing and pharmacy and dentistry in the state of Minnesota and veterinary medicine expands well outside of our schools into other areas, particularly in nursing. And I think that there would be ample opportunity for us to do collaborative efforts there. I don't have any specifics to give you because I haven't looked at it in depth, but I think there is room.
Yeah, no, I wasn't looking for a specific at all, but as a way of approaching what may be the big question for the university in the next 5 years or 10 years, that's all. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, the last question goes to Paul Thatcher.
Doctor, let's confine this to the medical side because I think it'd be easier for you to answer. In regard to research and innovation and invention and then harvesting that technology and commercialization of it, and so we all notice that we're running out of gas on some of our patents, and so some of the largest producers of revenue that the university has ever had, I guess the largest have ever had, and what do you see downstream, and do you think that we're doing all that we should be doing to try and replace those sources of revenue and are thoughtful people making thoughtful judgments about how we're investing these ever more difficult to find funds and so on. And could you help lead that if you were on the Board of Regents?
Yeah, in answer to your question, Mr. Thatcher, I think that there are thoughtful people leading efforts that could create new opportunities for the future in the medical environment particularly. And much of that has been fueled with some of the private philanthropy that's come into the university in the last few years, particularly, for example, the Diabetes Institute and the combined effort between the university and Mayo to cure diabetes. That could be a huge, maybe the biggest thing that ever happened here if that were to work. And we are in the lead of that internationally at this point in time. But it goes back to what I said earlier, I think, about putting the right kind of scientists into those buildings. If we don't have the good, really high-quality, innovative, and creative scientists in those buildings, we won't have the patents on some of the things that have benefited the state and the university from in the past.
Do we have people on the board that are leading that, that have the background that you have to help lead that? Don't be modest, Doctor. We're fishing around here. We need help.
I don't know that we do, Mr. Thatcher. At this point, I don't know the intimate details of the current regent's backgrounds, but I don't think we have anyone with those kind of backgrounds.
Thank you.
Quick follow-on to that. Is it the board that would drive it, or would it be the administration that would drive the ferreting and identification of those stellar people?
Well, I think the management and administration would be the people that did the recruiting, but I think the board should set expectations for the administration about what type of people they want to have on board.
Okay. Would you like to make some closing remarks, Roby Thompson?
Well, thank you again, Madam Chair. I have only a brief comment to make, and that is I like everybody else in the state, thank all of you for your service to this organization. This is a new experience for me, learning about your counsel and the efforts you put in. And I express my appreciation to you. Would only reemphasize from a personal point of view my commitment to the University of Minnesota and trying to see that it goes forward as an excellent university for the future. And if I can help in doing that, I would love to do so.
Thank you very much.
My apologies for my phone going off. It's a new phone. I don't know how to work it.